Hey guys, welcome to Let's Talk Venture, the podcast dedicated to travelers, backpackers and explorers with thousands of stories. My name is Tony and today I'm talking with Anastasia, a Russian girl who's passing by Lyon in France before finishing her trip through Europe. Together we talk about her career as a former anthropologist and English teacher, the life and culture in Russia and obviously funny stories about her trip in Europe. So here we go. Let's talk venture with Anastasia.
Should I sit closer?
No, that's good.
Okay,
here we go.
Okay.
Don't be so strict. Clearly,
okay.
It's something that it's more for fun than
okay.
For real journalism.
Okay.
Ça marche. Okay. À plus tard.
So, in English, is okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's the principle. So, to mm-hmm. pitch. To pitch you the idea, I did this podcast mostly for stories with alternative way of traveling.
Okay.
And also mostly, the most important thing is to have funny stories about traveling.
Oh, I have a lot of funny stories.
Yes. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Okay. Anastasia. Like evil sister in Cinderella.
I forgot this one.
And this princess.
Yeah,
Anastasia.
I mostly have the princess, which is a really good movie. If you saw
yeah,
the,
of course,
the cartoon.
I loved it.
Mm.
It's not historical accurate,
yeah.
But I kind of enjoyed it. It's very beautiful.
Yeah.
So my name is Anastasia.
Yeah.
Anastasia in English. I am a freelancer. I have a bachelor degree in anthropology. But now I work as a teacher of English language, and I teach different people, adult, old people, little kids, to speak English. And I'm one of the best on the online English market in Russia. Really, I'm one of the best 6 years experience. And I work on...
Like you are rated the best one?
Yes, I'm one of the best online.
Okay.
Yeah,
nice.
Yes, and I have a lot of clients. And because I work online, I can travel.
Mm-hmm.
In summer, I traveled like 3 weeks from Finland to Nuremberg, Germany. And I was working. I just took my laptop in hostels and I'm like, okay, 4 hours I'm working. And then I go exploring. In Russia, I work mostly from home, but I like working while traveling. It's very cool.
I am so jealous of your life right
now. I love all this digital nomad style.
Yeah.
And actually, I haven't traveled at all in my life. It's my first year of traveling.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had been only to Finland with my family,
mm-hmm.
and that's all. And this year I decided, okay, I want to travel. I want to see the world.
And so you have been traveling for how long?
3 weeks in summer and this week.
So it's your fourth week of doing a solo traveling?
Yes, really.
And it's like now it's your project for this year, to travel and to continue to teach at the same time.
Yeah, something like this.
This is great.
What can I... Okay, I can tell a funny story about my studies as anthropologist, a funny story about being a teacher,
mm-hmm.
or a funny story about traveling. Which one do you want?
Okay, as you want. I'm sure it will be interesting. So
okay.
The thing you are interesting about.
Okay, I'm going to tell you about my studies as anthropologist.
Yeah.
Maybe you know there is such a science like forensic reconstruction. You take a skull of a person who is long dead, and you try to reconstruct his or her face.
Mm.
This method was invented by Russian scientist Gerasimov back in the 50s.
Yeah.
And I used to work in the laboratory, and my teachers were his students. So it was like from the first hands, taking experience from the first hands. And it's a cool, it's the creepiest and the coolest place in the world. It's a basement in a living apartment house in Moscow. And you just come there and there are skulls and bones everywhere, real ones from all over the world. People reconstruct them. Yes, and people, girls I studied with, they just freaked out. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's my favorite place now. I had my favorite skull, he was my friend. He was a Bulgarian guy who lived like 3,000 years ago. And he was my friend every time I went.
3,000?
Yes, he died 3,000 years ago. And his skull was on my table. And I was like, he was my friend. And I had my own reconstruction.
Yeah.
They gave me a skull of a guy who lived on Chukotka. Do you know where Chukotka is?
No.
Okay, this is Alaska.
Yeah.
And in front of it, in Russia, Chukotka.
Okay.
It's like they have a border, a Russian-American border. And he lived there 2,000 years ago. And they gave me his skull and told me, okay, do a reconstruction. And I did it for, I was doing it like 3 weeks, I think. I drew his face.
Okay.
And actually, he had a really interesting face. It wasn't Asian. It was more like Indian. And the girl who made a reconstruction of the skull found in the same grave, and she made a very similar reconstruction to me,
okay.
Indian, not an Asian.
Okay.
And we had a discussion. So first idea was that this time there were different people living there, more Indian-like, not Asian.
Yeah.
The other opinion was those guys came from America. They traveled through the north, and they died in Chukotka.
So when you say India, Indian from America? Or
America,
Indian?
American, yeah.
Okay.
He had a very typical Indian face.
Okay, not
he's
Indian from the country.
American,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, very typical Indian face is what I drew. It was so interesting. I took this skull. I made a picture of it, and they gave me instruments and schemes, and I needed to like draw a face around the skull. It's really cool because we have very complicated faces. Every part of our skull has different
muscle,
different tissues, yes, and they all have different size, and you need to know it. And then suddenly you see a face on a paper. It's a real man who lived 2,000 years ago, and I have this picture in my apartment now. And it's like, this is, and also actually you can learn a lot about a person studying his skull. For example, I learned he was 40 years old when he died, because his skull was, had more special marks you have when you are 40. And he was kind of important guy because his grave was kind of very interesting for archaeologists. And then we had, okay, this is my favorite story. I tell it to everyone. I came to this place every week, and suddenly our tutor called me and said, Anastasia, we have a problem. The fire department came and said that we create a fire danger in our basement.
Okay.
So we need to clean the place, but we are all old people. We cannot do this. And I gathered the girls I studied with, and I said, okay, we go there and we clean the place. And actually, it was really difficult because there was dust everywhere, a lot of garbage, and these skulls everywhere. But we did it. We spent there like the whole day. And so, and closer to the evening, we opened the wardrobe and we saw like shelves, books. But then we realized that it's only the first layer. It's like 2 meters deep wardrobe. And there are like so many things. And we started, you know, cleaning it, trying to find at least, trying to sort the things out.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I see a bag, like old style bag, like back in the Soviet times, very typical big bag, big traveling bag.
Okay.
And I open it. There are a lot of newspapers, about 80s, I think. I spotted there was some years, like 84, 86, something like this, really old. And there was a pack of cigarettes, a Camel. I open it, and there are teeth. And I'm just like, oh my, what is this? And I open and I like look at this bag, and there are bones, real bones.
There was a dead, of a dead.
Yeah, it was a full skeleton
in the bag.
In this bag. I called the girls, and they're like, what is what is this? The skull was broken, like, it was, the face was broken.
Yeah.
So I call the teachers, kind of, what is this and what shall we do with this?
Yeah.
And they're like, we don't know. No one opened this bag since Soviet time. They called another guy. What is this? No one knows. They called a woman who had already retired, and they asked her, okay, this is the end of the 80s. Whose skeleton is this? What is this? And she's like, I have no idea. And we're like, okay, let's just put it somewhere. Okay, called it a day. And then I was like, okay, it's from Europe. It's definitely from Europe because there were posters from Czechoslovakia, Czech Republic. And I thought, okay, maybe they were to Czech, to Prague, and they gave them this skeleton to reconstruct. Okay. Because this lab is the best in the world. And and I thought, so maybe they just gave the skeleton and forgot about it. Like Soviet time had ended and everyone forgot. I called the teacher and I said, okay, maybe you should contact the museum, the institute, whatever, and said them that we had found your skeleton. And she was like, oh no, it's perfectly fine. It was a geology expedition. They found a skeleton, called the police. The police said this guy had been dead for centuries. So they took him to Moscow and now he's there. And I was like, yeah. So you kill a person, you put him in a bag, and then you say that, oh, we found him. Yeah. I guess it was a scene of a crime. Want to hide a dead body? Hide it where a lot of body. Okay, dead bodies.
Was it a scene of crime?
I don't know. I still believe they kill someone and put it in him into the bag. Is there like, oh, it was expeditions. They found him in Siberia.
Do you realize that one of your teachers may be a serial killer?
Yeah, yeah. Because okay, there are like thousand skulls.
Yeah.
No one would care. Kind of, there are some.
And I think in this field, you know that if you find a skeleton that is not registered or something like that, you have a procedure or something like that to declare that there may be it's someone, maybe someone has been killed by someone who's still alive.
there is a law, and we were told on the first year,
yeah,
like if you found skull or bone, human bones, call the police, and only the police can tell you is it like.
And they didn't contact the police.
I don't know. They told me, okay, we found this guy, we brought him here, it was in the 30 years ago, we know nothing. It's still a mystery to me. And I was like, okay. I just like, okay, we have a skeleton and no one knows what it
and
is.
And so, when did it happen?
5 years ago.
Okay, and so you left after a few months after, so you don't know if they called the police or not?
No. I don't think, it's kind of... Okay, let me explain. This place is full of bones and skulls found by archaeologists.
Mm.
And they told me this skeleton is one of them.
Okay.
But I still believe they killed someone. Because you cannot prove anything
in
this case. It's key. I think, yes, he's still there in the bag.
Oh my gosh.
It's kind of my favorite story. I tell it to everyone. But I was there for a few years, like coming every week, helping them
So it was kind of an internship or
something volunteer.
Volunteer work.
Yeah, they gave me papers that I helped them.
Okay.
It's an amazing place. Mm. It's the people who work there are so cool, and it's so cool how much you can learn from studying these bones, these skulls.
Because there is a TV show about that. Like, I don't know if you know the show Bones.
Oh, yeah. It's this.
It's the same idea.
Yeah. The main character is a forensic anthropologist.
Yeah.
And we studied forensic anthropology on the first year. Mm-hmm. And then, for example, I can go to the police university in Russia for getting my master, because mm-hmm. my qualification allows me that.
So what is that? How many jobs do you have?
Only one. I'm an English language teacher. But
okay.
I can, for example, if I want, I can go to Russia, apply to the Ministry of Internal Affairs and say, I want to work in the police department. I can apply to university and become a forensic anthropologist.
Okay.
And work in the police.
Okay.
If I want. But I'm not sure I want.
Okay.
I'm more like traveling.
Yeah, right now. Good for me.
Yes. By the way, the thing that I'm in France now is total accident. I wasn't going here.
That's supposed to be my first question, actually. But yeah. Okay, why are you in France?
Yeah. Okay, I was planning a travel through around Spain, mm-hmm. from Madrid to Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
I planned everything beforehand.
Wait a second. From Madrid to Barcelona, and so you are in France?
Yeah. So that was my idea. I booked everything. I bought the tickets.
Okay.
Did it all beforehand.
Okay.
So morning, 15th of October, I land in Madrid, and my father sent me news that there are rebels in Barcelona, and it might be dangerous to go there.
Okay.
Yeah. So I decided to walk around Madrid and ask locals.
Yeah.
I speak Spanish a little bit, so I just simply ask them. Oh, I'm a tourist. Should I go there? What would you say? And they all told me, not go. Don't go, it's dangerous.
Okay.
And my friends told me the same, that it might be dangerous to go. Because, right, okay, they blocked the airport.
They blow the airport in Barcelona?
Yes, no one could leave. Like, a few hundred people just were stuck there. There are a lot of photos of them walking by feet back to the city with all the luggage. Because everything was blocked. Trains, buses, airport, no... 100 flights were cancelled on Monday and Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and for example, yesterday they blocked Sagrada Familia.
Okay.
And tourists couldn't leave the place for a few hours until the police came. And so I was like, okay, I don't want to stuck there, actually. So it was like a moment idea. I can go to Lyon because my... airplane can go from Lyon and the air fleet company changed my ticket, but now Catalonia owes me 120 euro. It's how much I had to spend on changing the tickets, and I lost my booking, and I won't forget it. So it was like I just planned everything for 20 minutes. Okay, Lyon, okay, at least I see France.
Okay,
so here I am. I just it was I think a day ago.
Okay.
One day ago, and I was like, okay, there is a bus from Saragossa to Lyon, and there is airplane, I can go back to Moscow. Okay.
So you are planning to go back to Moscow?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Have a plane. Actually, my original idea was to be in Barcelona and leave it on Monday evening.
Okay.
But, well, so now I'm here, so it's like a perfect accident. I'm not supposed to be here.
Okay, okay.
And my father was like, oh, Anastasia, just go to Paris. And I was like,
no, not
this time.
No, no.
Too far away. What? Isn't it a good city?
Yeah, it's often a subject in the podcast that I say, okay, I'm originally from nearby Paris.
Okay.
And I know all the stereotype that people, tourists, foreigners have about Paris, that, oh, it's the city of love, it will be so wonderful, the Eiffel Tower, the Notre Dame, it will be amazing. It is not.
Yeah.
The transportation is bullshit, you have no Wi-Fi, it's a grey city, it's dusty, it smells peace, there are so many pigeons. And people are awful there.
Okay. Well, you know, I've heard a lot of the stories, like people are disappointed about Paris.
Yes.
And while I was walking from my station to here,
mm-hmm.
I was so enchanted with this place.
With Lyon?
Yeah, Lyon, yes. And I called my mother and said, you know, when people say, talk about France, about Paris, I think they mean Lyon, cities like this, because, well, they even have their own small Eiffel Tower on the hill.
It's actually an antenna.
Ah, yeah, it looks like Eiffel Tower. To me, it's okay.
But it's quite small, actually. It's just, I think it's something like 40 meters high,
mm-hmm.
something like that. But it's because it's high on a hill that it seems high. But when you are on the foot of this antenna,
I'm totally fine with it. By the way, speaking of Notre Dame, because now people cannot go there because of this accident, there is a funny story my father told me. My father is a great traveler. He had traveled a lot in Britain and the USA, all by car.
Yeah.
He, in the 90s, he bought a car in Holland, in Amsterdam, and drove it back to Moscow through Europe in the 90s. Yes.
From Amsterdam?
Yeah, he bought it there and he just drove home. It was back in the 90s.
What?
Yeah. And also my father worked in the north of Russia, in Siberia, so he's a great traveler. So, and my father was in, once was in Paris, like 10 years ago.
Yes.
And he wanted to see Notre Dame.
Yes.
So he came there and there were a lot of people and he was like, okay, next time. And when we saw on TV Notre Dame was burning, it was like, oh, it's never, I should come. Yeah, but it's also a funny thing. In the 1993, my father was in New York. He worked there for a couple of months.
No.
In New York. And he wanted to go to the World Trade Center, but it was closed because there was some accident in the first floor, and it was closed. And he was like, okay, next time. So I'm like, Dad, check all... Okay, remind me of all notorious places you've never been to, because they are in great danger now. Because it's like... And my dad was like, okay, fuck, it's the second time in my life.
I don't know your father, but I have an image of a man in front in Italy who wants to go to the Tower of Pisa and saying the bus is shut down. So he said, okay, next time.
And then... He said it fell. Yeah, if I think if my father ever been was in Italy, yeah, I think this is exactly what would happen. Yes, actually, my dad is one of these people who like attract accidents to himself. It's like my mother, there is a joke in our family. If my mother cooks fish and there is one small bone, and we have a big family, I have two brothers, so we all live together, and there is one small bone, it will be in my father's plate. It's like always like this. He just attracts and accidents to himself. Yeah, so but he is very experienced in traveling.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's,
okay,
it's,
maybe he just lived dangerously, so
yeah.
Even if he knows that there is a bone, he would.
Yeah, okay, this man...
But just the story about the Notre Dame and the World Trade Center.
Yeah, yes, that was exactly his point. He was like, okay, next time. And then it was 9/11, and he was watching, we were watching TV, and he was like... Fuck! Why haven't I gone there? Why haven't I gone there? And unless it was Notre Dame, my dad was like...
you were with him? With him?
Yeah, I live with my family. Yeah, we live in a countryside house together, all together, and we watch movies with my brothers every evening, like TV shows, movies. I have a big room, and I put my laptop. We choose a TV show. Buy snacks and we sit like there. Yeah. We are all adults, actually. It's common in Russia when you're adult to live with your parents. I'm kind of okay because the house is very big. I work, I pay for electricity. For now, I'm fine. I'd better spend extra money I have on traveling, on studying, on getting my driving license, than on renting an apartment. So, and my brothers have a very active social life and it affects me in a good way because they just come and say, okay, we go there, we go there. And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I should go there somewhere too. So I'm perfectly fine. And we watch news in the evening to get all together. My mother cooks and we are kind of,
okay.
We really get along and we have two cats and one of them misses me. My dad sent me a photo when I landed to Madrid with my cat, and he told me that she has been like this for a couple of hours. Well, she's, her name is Risha.
Okay, for the audio description, it's your cat in front, I think, outside of your house.
Yeah,
and looking down really sadly.
She got used to that I'm always at home because I work at home. And she came to me, she lies on the table, she kind of works with me. And when I was leaving in the morning on a taxi, she ran to the taxi and she was like, where are you going? It's 5 a.m. What the hell? She's like this, so I'm miss her. She's so fluffy. She's like a toy.
Okay.
So I think she will be happy to see me.
So your original plan was just living for 4 weeks or for a year?
No, for 1 week only, just holiday.
Okay.
And in summer I was traveling for 3 weeks.
Okay.
Actually, it's a little bit difficult to work and travel when you teach, because you need to be, you have a schedule you need to follow. Mm-hmm. Sometimes internet connection is very poor. So I decided that this time I'm not going to work. I just told everyone I'm on holiday.
Okay.
And maybe next year I will think something up.
Okay.
Because for me, the best option, I think, is like going to a hostel to rent it for the whole week. And like work the half of a day and going around, because this way I might be sure that I'm always on schedule, the internet connection is good, and I won't fail my students. Because for example, in summer I had problems in Hamburg, they just had terrible internet connection, I couldn't work at all. My students didn't hear me. I'm sorry, I had to apologize. But Hamburg is a great city.
Okay.
It has St. Peter Church, and it has 123 meters tower, and you pay €3 and you can come there, and you put your signature on a paper that you, if you die there, it's not their fault.
If you
break something
on which tower?
It's St. Peter Church.
Okay.
Yeah, and they have a tower. I don't have a photo of it. Spire, Saint. Okay, maybe
in St. Petersburg.
No. Hamburg.
Okay.
Hamburg. It's very tall. It's like 123 meters tall. And,
okay. Oh yeah. It's quite.
Yes. It's one of the tallest. It's the tallest in the city. And you pay €3 and you can come inside.
Oh.
I put a signature that if I die there, it's not their fault. I don't have any complaints. And it was like, please return at 4 p.m. It was like, if you something happens to you, they are not looking for you until 4 p.m. Because there is no one there. There is no people working there. And there is there's just stairs without anything. And I was okay the first half of the tower, and then the stairs started shaking under me, and there was nothing to hold, and there was...
The ground?
Yeah.
Was shaking.
Yeah, the stairs were shaking. And I actually realized that mostly tourists don't go to the top of this. They stay in the middle and then go back. And I was like, okay, I paid €3. I want to go to the spire. I wanna hit this point. In the middle of the tower, I started swearing in Russian very loudly because I was scared. I was so scared. I tried to calm myself, like, oh, you know, okay, it's safe. It's a tourist attraction. It must be safe. And then I remembered Notre Dame. I told people the same, and then it burned. And I was like, okay. So, you know, Russian swearings are very loud, very rude, and I just started like... And by the end of the tower, I started praying to St. Peter. I'm an atheist. And I started praying. I was like, oh my God, please. I don't want to die here. And then I finally was upstairs. I sat on a chair, looked at the beautiful city. And then I looked down and I realized that I have to go down. And it was like, please, don't look down. It was cool. I went out. I was all wet.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was the best €3 I ever spent in my life. It was so adventurous. I've been to a lot of spires after this, and no one was as exciting as this.
Oh, nice.
Because, for example, there is St. Nicholas Spire. It was destroyed during bombing in Second World War. But there is an elevator, and you can go upstairs.
Yeah, but it's like, it's easy.
Yeah, you just pay €5, there's an elevator, you just stay there and see the city. No, this one, I earned this view from the tower. I earned it. I was going there, dying, slowly dying of fear and dehydration, but I did it. I didn't.
Well, I totally understand and feel what you're feeling. I experienced the same thing. I went to Norway this summer.
Okay,
for
how was it?
It was so cool. A lot of rain, but...
I dream to visit Norway.
Oh, it's amazing.
Okay.
I went there to do woofing. So, do you know the woofing?
Woofing,
the idea is that you are in a spot where you are hosted and you are fed.
In
exchange, you walk a little bit there.
I know.
So that's what I did. And so I still had moments to travel a little bit, to visit places which was nearby. And one of the main attractions that I didn't know was there in the Helleland part, nearby Stavanger. Is the Preikestolen.
Okay.
And the Preikestolen, if you have a picture.
Okay.
So Preikestolen.
Oh yeah, I know this place.
Yes, it's so famous.
Okay.
And from the moment I arrived to the airport, there was directly like an image saying, "Welcome to Stavanger. Here we have Preikestolen."
Okay.
And so I went there on the last day. Like, I didn't expect to visit that many places actually, because I had no car. I just went there to relax and walk a little bit and mostly enjoy nature.
Okay.
And there was other people who was doing woofing with me who had a car. And they said we want. And at the beginning, when we meet, I'm asking, okay, what are you planning for this week? Are you planning to do some hikes or something like that? I was not lucky because one of the girls was scared.
Oh, okay.
Afraid of high. One of the girls had an accident with her knees, so had trouble to do hikes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the girls had an accident with...
With the hips.
Hips.
Okay.
With her hips. Hips bones, so she couldn't do any heights at all.
Okay.
And so I was the only one, and I said, I don't want to do hiking on my own. And the weeks comes by, and at the end of the weeks, I'm saying, okay, I am nearby Stavanger, I have to do this one. So I asked, okay, do you mind if we go there, you just drop me at the place where the hiking starts, and then I do that, and then you can visit and everything. I said, yeah, sure, let's go for it. And I went there, I arrived on the top at this place. I will put a picture to show how high it is, but once you are up there, I didn't expect to be so scared. I was terrified.
Oh my god!
You walk, even if you are at 2 meters from the void, you are terrified because there is so much wind. And you just walk and you just approach yourself from the wall to not fall. And then once you arrive to big rocks, and you want to see a little bit the view, you walk a little bit there, and then instantly you just crawl on the floor. And so I did that with the camera. I crawled, I took a picture of the cliff, of the falling down, and then I said, someone behind me, okay, can you please take the camera while I am trying to stand up? Because I was crawling with my camera in the hand, I couldn't do anything else. I said, okay, help me, please help me.
Okay. Do you know that this when you stand on the edge of this, there is this feeling as if you are falling.
Yes.
You know, where did this feeling come from? Our ancestors lived on the trees many millions of years ago.
Okay.
So it's actually if you live on a tree and you suddenly on the edge of a branch, so you have two options: you either fall or you jump to a different tree.
Okay.
And so our ancestors lived on the trees for million years. We are tree habitants, and it's like a natural reaction. If there is an edge, jump to the nearest tree. But now it's like there is no trees, but people have this feeling as if there are. Like inclining,
yes.
And our teachers told us that because this instinct, it's really ancient, it's millions. Because for million years, it was the only option. If there is an edge, jump. jump to the nearest tree, not to fall. But now we kind of there is no trees we can jump on.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah, so there is this feeling that you are falling, and many people are afraid of it. But actually, it's not this feeling that you are inclining is wrong.
Yes.
You're not doing this.
Yes.
But your body is
feeling it.
Yes, feeling it because it's so ancient. It's much more ancient than anything else.
Okay.
Tell us, jump.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is it.
Okay. You said that in Russia it's commonly known and commonly acting that people still live with in families.
Yeah.
In big groups of families.
Yeah. So like sometimes it's like three generations living in one place.
Okay.
Because grandparents also live together always. But my dad bought an apartment for my grandma, so she doesn't live with us. So we live. I for example, when my parents bought their own house, actually, I think that they planned that when some of us start our own families, one of us will bring it to this house, so we will all live together.
Mm.
So I guess the youngest of us is definitely going to do this because he's a very home person. Actually, I'm talking about my brothers. They are amazing guys. They are 19 and 18. And they were really, really cool and really smart. This is, let me show you. This is Gleb. He's the youngest of us all. He's an artist and he's a gardener.
Okay.
This is our territory of the house, and it's like it's all in vegetables in flowers. He grows pumpkins, cucumbers, salads.
In your garden?
Yeah. He just like, oh, it was like one day it was very funny. The storm started. Here's his pumpkin.
Mm.
The storm started, and he had just came from college. And he was like, oh my gosh, cucumbers are open. This thing was open and the rain started. And he jumped to the garden in his suit with a bag. And he was like, oh my gosh, they're my cucumbers. My cucumbers. And he's an artist. He draws really interesting pictures and he also takes photos. He's very good at it. And the middle one, Matvey. Actually, remember his name because I guess he will be either a very known businessman in Russia or a politician.
Okay.
He's a member of the Yas Parliament in my hometown.
Okay.
And he has
intern.
Yeah, he's top one. There are always girls around him. He's very beautiful. And when he has internship. Yeah, he has internship in the Russian Parliament.
Okay.
And last week he was there and he told us, oh, you know, I talked to this politician, he's very known in Russia, to this one, and make a photo with this one. He's a person who came to the leader of the biggest party in Russia after there's a liberal party, it's the second biggest.
Okay.
And he just, oh, my name is Matvey, I'm from the Yas Parliament, nice to meet you. So, and he's like very open, he's like king of networking.
Okay.
So when I need, and this is our mother. How do you think? How old is she?
Oh my gosh! Oh,
okay, try to guess. It's our favorite game. How old is she?
Will she listen to the podcast?
I don't know, but she will. I don't know. Her English is not that good.
Okay. How old are you?
25. It's kind of family thing. We all look here. All the women.
44.
She is 50. She's almost 50.
What?
She's
what?
Let me say 48 this year. Yeah, I know she looks much younger. No one believes I'm her daughter. Everyone thinks I'm her younger sister. And it's like very funny because okay, this guy and Gleb is much taller, and she's like, oh, this is my little one, and they're like, okay, and how old is the big one? And she's like 25. And she's not like she's kind of young mother. She graduated. When I was born, she had already graduated.
Okay.
But she didn't change at all. At her photos when she's 22, she looks the same. Absolutely the same. And this is our great-great-grandparents on the photo.
Okay.
There is a tradition in Russia. On the 9th of May, in the day of victory, the day of the end of the Second World War.
Okay.
We have so-called immortal parade. People come with photos of their grandparents who took part in the Second World War, and they march through the main street of the cities.
Oh.
So this is our great-grandparents. This is Maria, my grand-grandmother, and she, like, the coolest person I ever heard about. She collected a big library of books. She worked all her life on the military factory, and she was, like, super smart and super cool, and she liked soap operas on TV. Yes, and her daughter, my grandmother, she was top one engineer on the factory. They made lenses for weapon and for spacecraft.
Okay.
And my grandmother worked there since she was 16, and her mother as well. And she was like top one. When she decided to retire, people just grabbed her and said, please don't go. Don't go, please. You're the only one smart person left here. Yes, so, yes, this is kind of my family has very interesting history. I have Greek roots, and my ancestors were from Greece, some of them were Roma, gypsies, and most of them were from Ukraine. My grandfather was black. He was black Ukrainian, and unfortunately I don't have any photo of him here, but his skin was much or less light, but his face was like African type. And we have no idea how it happened. What did he do in Ukraine?
What's his name? It's a sickness of skin where you have albinos.
He was Ukrainian, but
okay.
He had curly hair. His lips were like African, like
yeah,
big
he,
one.
Yeah, but his skin was white.
No, he wasn't white. Like normal color, a little bit darker than mine, as my grandma says. And it was like as if he was half, he was like a mulat, like he was half white, half black. But we have no idea how could it happen. It's Ukraine. He was born in the 1960s, I think. I have no idea. There were no people with dark skin there.
Okay.
Only Ukrainians, Hebrew, Russians. We have no idea. And the funny thing is, when my grandfather and my uncle were born, they looked like my grandma says, he looked like a little African. And everyone was shocked how this happened. White parents and this boy with big lips, with curly hair, and only with years he looked more like Russian type.
Okay.
And I have, for example, my hair is very thick.
Yeah.
I cannot color them. I have the same problem girls with dark skin has. They can't color them and they're very... Like, you cannot do anything with them.
Yeah.
And my mother thinks that those are these African genes, like, fourth generation. Like, and it's kind of very funny. We have this photo of my great-grandpa. It's like, this is our great-grandpa. He was a black guy. We have no idea how it happened. And he was in NKVD.
He was in what?
Do you know NKVD?
No.
Do you know KGB?
No.
Do you know Stalin?
Yes.
Okay, when Stalin was leader of the country,
yeah.
There was this NKVD that hunted people,
okay.
Like putting people in prisons. These were really scary people, and he was one of them.
Okay,
it
was a group of policemen.
I don't know. It was like, you know, this time there was no difference between the police and KGB. It was one department,
yes.
Very
yes.
Powerful, and only late after the war it was torn apart.
Okay,
on two different departments. So my great-grandpa, I think he was more a policeman, and like everyone who knew him, he had two awards taken part in the Second World War. One of them he took for killing 7 Nazis from his personal gun, and the second one he got when he burnt down the place where Nazis were planning on attacking the village. He just came there and burned the place, and he got his second award.
Okay.
We found this information in archives, and we were like, oh my gosh, what type of imagine this black guy in Soviet army uniform with a Molotov cocktail coming to the Nazi place.
I'm more and more realizing how impressive your family is and all your heritage. So, okay.
And his wife, my grandma, she lived all her. She moved to Russia with her newborn son, my grandpa.
Yes.
In the beginning of the war,
mm-hmm.
She never spoke Russian. She spoke only Ukrainian.
Okay.
And she was like, I don't need to speak Russian. Everyone understands me. I understand everyone. And she was making samagon, this handmade vodka. It was illegal. It was totally illegal. But no, she didn't. She never cared. She just, my grandma says, she was like, people just came to her and she was like, here you are. It was illegal, absolutely, but it seems like she didn't care.
Okay, talking about alcohol.
Yeah, my mind.
There are a lot of cliches that we have about Russia. And it's mostly cliché, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I feel like in France, we have this vision of Russia, country far away, in the snow, in the cold, with a lot of alcohol. So, what do you know about the cliché we have about Russia? Which ones are true, which ones are fake?
I think they are mostly partly true. Okay, for example, there is a cliché about that we drink vodka, like, all the time.
Yes.
Unfortunately, there are a lot of villages and towns where there is no job, no hope for future, and people really start drinking there.
Yes.
They're like, we have this verb in Russian, spivatsa. It means to drink so much alcohol that you're just slowly dying because of this. They have special purposes. And there are like whole villages that do this.
Okay.
It's a big problem. In big cities, where there is job, people don't drink more than like in Germany or in Finland.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I even think that we drink less than them. A kind of vodka is, yes, very popular. My dad drinks it like once a week, one shot as a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I personally like beer. I like to go to different pubs with my friends. It's like in Europe. So I can't say just like you, for example, it's forbidden to drink alcohol
in the street.
It's totally forbidden, for example.
Okay.
You cannot do this only in special places.
Okay.
It's forbidden to sell alcohol at night.
Okay.
So it's this case we are more like Europe.
Okay, I didn't know that it was so strict actually. About
now it's strict because it became a real problem.
Mm.
So government tried to control it. For example, if you buy alcohol in Russia, there is if you buy cheap alcohol, it might be like bad for your health. It might be poisonous.
Like, is it the same thing that in China actually? It's called alcool frelaté. I only know that in French. Sorry.
Okay.
So it's actually medical alcohol.
Uh-huh.
Where they put flavors and water inside.
That's something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
And for example, if you buy alcohol in Russia, if it's legal, if it's licensed, it has a special QR code,
mm-hmm.
and you can check it.
Okay.
So for example, when I'm not sure, I can just scan it and check it. Does it have a license?
Okay.
And if it has, I buy it. It's
okay.
The other cliche about cold. People who say Russia is cold forget that Russia is very big and there are a few climate zones,
mm-hmm.
very different.
Mm-hmm.
Petersburg is more like Scandinavia. It's not really cold in winter, it's not really hot in summer, but there is always a lot of rain and it's kind of very depressing city. People who live there, they say sometimes it's kind of not good for mental health.
Yes, because the lake builds sunlight and so
mm-hmm. yeah,
sometimes
they don't.
It creates depression.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
so that's a problem with Petersburg. In Sochi, where Olympic Games took place, it's very warm. It's super warm. They never have minus at winter. In winter,
oh, really?
It's like
okay.
-2 is the coldest. People, students I work online from this area, they say it's always warm. It's like more European climate. In Moscow, it's so-called continental climate. It's cold in winter, but it's hot in summer.
Okay.
But in recent years, something wrong is happening to the weather. We have cold summers. It was +10 in summer. It was super cold. It was the coldest summer ever. And we don't have snow in winter. It's like, usually it must be -20 in Moscow. But I don't remember when it was last time. Usually it's not, now it's very warm, but it's unusual.
Okay.
It's supposed to be -20.
Yeah.
If it's cold, schools are closed. Many people don't work.
Okay.
In Siberia, it's even more extreme. It might be +40 in summer and -15 in winter. So this is what you call Russian cold. -40, -50, but it's extreme.
Actually, even -20 for us is cold.
No,
it's really cold. It's extreme cold.
You need to have special clothes. Like, for example, in Russia, there is like winter collection. Shoes, boots, special winter boots. Coats. The thing is, you need to cover your butt. That's the most important thing. If you don't cover it, you can get sick. So all the winter clothes.
You can get sick.
You have might have problems with your with everything, especially for girls, it's dangerous.
Oh yes.
So
okay.
We'll
So we'll be long.
At least to the knees.
Mm-hmm.
It will be okay.
Okay.
Scarves, mittens, and a hat. And a hat must cover your ears.
Yes.
Because if you go outside, your ears are like red color. They're burning, and then you can have ear infection. It's really terrible. It's very painful.
Yes.
So. It's kind of always cover your ears in winter, and it's okay, it's not that bad.
Okay.
But in Siberia, yes, they can sometimes have so really cold. Like my dad once worked in Siberia in winter, and he told me that they lived in a cabin, and when they woke up in the morning, they found that the can with water was frozen. They left a can with water, and it was all frozen to the deep. It was so cold inside. And he said, and he was like, oh my gosh, I need to go home. And he went back to Moscow. In Russia, it's never so cold.
Okay.
It's like minus 20, sometimes minus 30.
Okay.
But it's rare. It's kind of rare, and people are like, oh, why it's so cold? But elder people like it, because they feel better when the weather is cold. So, other cliche, I don't know.
Okay, I have one.
Yeah.
And I talked about it with one of my friends who went to Polonia?
Poland?
Poland.
Uh-huh, okay.
Is it true that in Russia,
mm-hmm.
people think it seems as done for men to smile?
Actually, yes. We even have a saying that it's difficult to translate it. That laughter without a reason is a marker of a stupid person. Yeah, so, but actually, we're kind of friendly. And if a Russian smiles to you, if he talks friendly to you, it means that he really likes you. It doesn't, for example, like in Europe, you smile when to be polite. In Russia, we are quite rude, actually. We are quite impolite. But if a Russian person smiles to you, if he wants to shake hands with you, if he laughs with you, if he says, oh my gosh, come to my, I will show you the best place in the town, just come with me. He doesn't do it because he's polite. He does it because he likes you.
Oh.
So if a Russian is polite with you, he does it because he really likes you.
Okay.
Because if he doesn't like you, he will be really rude to you.
Okay.
So this is like this. We very rarely... polite with no reason.
Okay.
You need to, we kind of, but I like the person, so I come to the, okay, hi, my name is Anastasia, nice to meet you.
Ah.
But I do it because I like the person.
Okay.
And that's
okay.
How we do it in Russia.
It's a good way to to present it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it better.
Yeah, but actually, yes, if you come to Moscow,
it's a most, it's
see,
a more honest way.
Yeah, yeah.
To present yourself, or
yeah.
To treat with people.
Yeah, but in Moscow, people are really friendly. When there was football championship last year, people were really friendly. And I saw a lot of groups of foreigners, and people were like, oh my gosh, let me help you. I found a group of guys from Panama, and I talked to them and showed them a few nice places. It was kind of really good. But actually, we had a joke. When foreigners came to Moscow for championship, they were surprised. Like, Russia wasn't the same they thought. More civilized, with big cities, with friendly people. And we had a joke that government forbid us to let our bears come go around. That I was like, I want this championship ended. Because my pet bear is so depressed, I had to lock him in the house and I don't let him drink vodka. We have the joke. Actually, about bears. In some villages, in towns, in Siberia, it's kind of common. Bears come into the villages trying to find food. My friend, she was from a small village in Siberia, and she told me, yes, we woke up in the morning and there were traces of bears.
Yeah.
In the village, they were looking for food.
Yeah.
But in big cities, no, of course not.
Okay.
No wild animals. We have wolves in the forest. If you live in the countryside, you can hear the wolf. But it's not like there are bears going along. In small villages, yes. In far away, yeah, it's wild nature. But in cities and towns, no bears. I didn't see any.
Okay.
I live in Russia, I didn't see. I saw a bear only in a zoo.
Okay. Talking about the size of Russia, so is it the same thing? I don't know if you know, from talking with a lot of Americans, I get the idea that the USA is divided a little bit like countries, like every state have their own personality, exactly the same way as we do in Europe. Is it the same thing inside Russia by itself?
Yes, and yes and no. There are 200 nationalities in Russia, and they all have their own...
How many? Sorry?
200.
Okay.
And most of them have... some of them have their own national republics.
Okay.
Like Chechnya, Tatarstan, Yakutia. Those are national republics. People...
Okay.
There are two official languages. Russian is governmental language, and a local. For example, in Tatarstan, there's also Russian and Tatarian. So you can live in Tatarstan all your life and never speak Russian. Because they have to give all the papers you need in the second official language. And it's like there are national republics and people are very... For example, there are two words to say Russian. There is Ruski, like me, it's ethnicity. Ruski, ethnicity. But there is a word Rossiyanin. It means a citizen of Russia, but not... But a different ethnicity.
Okay.
And if you call, for example, if you call a Yakut Ruski, he say, no, I'm not, I'm Yakut. I'm a citizen of Russia, but I'm Yakut. I'm not Ruski.
Ruski is Russian?
Ethnicity. Ethnical. I'm ethnical Russian.
Okay.
So I can say I'm Ruskaya.
Okay.
But some people, like Hebrew, Tatar, other 200 nationalities, they say I'm Rossiyanin, Russian citizen. But I'm a different ethnicity.
Okay.
And sometimes it becomes, for example, there are sometimes problems like inter-ethnicity problems, and people start saying like Russians go fuck away from here. It sometimes happens. But mostly, actually, we kind of divide themselves like Siberian. Siberians, there are Siberians. They say I'm a Siberian. We are different.
Okay.
Some people are very proud that they're from Petersburg. There is sort of rivalry between Petersburg and Moscow. Moscow think that people from Petersburg they are always depressed, but they're very smart. It's even like an insult, Petersky intelligent guy from a Petersburg. Yeah, and people in Petersburg think that people in Moscow are rude, are too ambitious. And a girl from Petersburg once told me, why you guys in Moscow always run somewhere? Because in Moscow subway, people always run, always go very fast. They never wait.
Okay.
We always go somewhere. In Petersburg, you just stay and wait. Wait your turn to go down, to sit on a train. You don't rush.
Okay.
And in Moscow, you do it, and you can always say from which city a person is.
Ah.
And we speak a little bit different. Some words are specific Petersburg. Some words are specific for Moscow.
Okay.
There is a rivalry.
But geographically,
St. Petersburg.
I have to say it in the French way. So St. Petersburg and Moscow are far away from each other?
Night on a train. Six hours. Petersburg is closer to Scandinavia.
Like a fast train?
There is a really fast train. It's even faster, I think.
Okay, and so it takes 6 hours?
Regular train, 6 hours.
Okay.
There is like special train. I think it's faster. I never tried it. My dad, got to go on a car.
Yeah.
So... When I was a little kid, my dad drove me to Petersburg, and in the evening we left, in the afternoon we left Petersburg, and I spent a night in the car, and in the morning we were in Moscow.
Okay.
So my dad just likes driving the car, so I just remember that I was sleeping in the car while he was driving.
So it takes something like 12 hours by car?
I think so.
Yeah.
They're kind of far away from each other,
okay.
Yes. The climate is different, people are different, history is really different. And in ancient time, like 1,000 years ago, there were different tribes living there.
Okay.
Different Slavic tribes, they spoke a little bit different languages, their culture was a little bit different, and only later they were united, like, in one country.
Yeah. But it's a little bit, I think it's the same distance that we have between Paris and Barcelona.
Yeah, I guess, but there is no mountains between them. Yes, so it is.
Okay. And talking about cliché now, what cliché do you have in Russia about France?
that you eat frogs.
Okay.
Yeah, there is even an insult for a French person. It's really old one. It's back from 19th century after the war with Napoleon, and very insult word about French people that they eat frogs. Лягушатник. It's kind of insult, but sometimes you can see it in some novels.
Yeah.
It's an insult.
Okay.
And we that French people are very elegant. That you like gentlemen, and that French people are very beautiful. That's very delicate.
Okay.
And yeah, something like this. And yes, people have this image of France in Russia, like for us, Europe is France. So when they say, I think for the most of people, when they say Europe, they think about France, not Germany or something else.
Yeah.
I think, at least it was for me when I was a kid.
Okay.
It's like, we love French culture. There are a lot of words from French language. Really, really lots of. For example, this verb, to walk,
promenade.
And there is a phrase in Russian. Идти на променад. It means go for a walk. And for example, if you see a girl like having makeup, dressing herself in Russian, I can say, "Ah, идешь на променад?" So you're going for a walk. It's kind of in sarcastic way, but yeah, it's like this. We call food stores magazine because some people called it this way in the 19th century, magazine.
Magazine.
Yeah, magazine. Magazine. Yeah, in Russian, it's magazine.
Okay.
Yeah, there are a lot of examples like this. Just like we borrow. Actually, the Russian language didn't exist before 19th century in this in modern way.
Okay.
There were some village dialects, very specific. There was official language that was kind of difficult to use. So educated people just spoke French.
Okay.
And there was this great poet in Russia, Pushkin. He actually created the literature Russian language we speak now. And since this time, there were a lot of novels, poetry written in modern Russian.
Okay.
But people had this habit to speak French. Like, for example, you can read a Russian book in Russian language, and characters just start speaking French. And his books now is written in French. Because a guy who wrote it spoke both languages. He just started writing his book in French. It's like original plan. And we have really a lot of words, and for us, like French novels like Hugo,
Victor Hugo.
Yeah, we call Hugo in Russian.
Okay.
Yeah, it's extremely popular.
Mm.
And when this accident with Notre Dame, everyone was, one of my friends was crying. She was like, "Oh my gosh, it was my favorite novel. It's my favorite place in Paris." And she was really upset.
Okay.
About it. When it was shown, Russian people were like, "Oh my gosh!" Because for us, Notre Dame was something.
Mm.
We, for example, we really like this musical show.
Yeah.
It was
Le Bossu de Notre Dame.
Yeah.
The humpback from Notre Dame.
This music show was really popular in Russia. Mm. We had our Russian language version with famous singers.
Okay.
There are like official Russian versions of these songs.
Mm.
They were extremely popular.
Do you have also, is it the movie, cartoon movie from Disney?
Yeah.
As well?
Yeah, no, Disney,
okay.
Everyone watched these cartoons.
Okay.
Yeah, for us, France is like Asterix and Obelix. Everyone loves them.
You know them?
Of course, okay. They're very popular. Listen, this movie starring Gérard Depardieu as one of the first things you watch if you're a kid in Russia. It's
really?
Extremely popular. It's like everyone loves them. Cartoons are less popular, mostly movies. But if we see these guys, we're like, Asterix and Obelix. We love them.
Because there was a big scandal a few years ago about Gérard Depardieu, the actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Who, it's actually a thing in France sometimes. In France,
mm-hmm.
the taxes and the are really high.
Mm-hmm.
And people who have enough money
mm-hmm.
to allow themselves sometimes to expatriate and pay less taxes because they can move into other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has been this big scandal. Gérard Depardieu expatriating himself into to Russia.
Yeah, yeah.
To avoid taxes, and yeah. So it was news everywhere saying he's a traitor. He's leaving the country to pay less taxes. Okay, I understand why he went to Russia if he's so popular.
Yeah, everyone loved him. It's French comedies. It's like it. When there was Soviet time, not many movies could be shown in Russia, but French movies were so popular. French comedies starring young Gerard Depardieu and other actors, Alain Delon, they're extremely popular.
Okay.
And in the 60s, there was this movie starring Brigitte Bardot, and all the women in Soviet Union started having haircuts like her, and they were, because you couldn't buy necessary materials for this, they were like village style types of trying to do this, to do it look like Brigitte Bardot. And everybody did this because it was extremely popular. And if it was a French movie, people were like, we need to go to the cinema, and people were watching a few senses at a row, in a row, just, oh my gosh, it's France, it's I can see it at least in a movie. And many people chose French to learn it as a second language.
Okay. Oh, you want a funny story about that?
Yeah.
My dad, when he was doing his studies, it was during the time of Cold War between USA and Russia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And because he was studying, he had the choice between two languages. Rather it was English, rather it was Russian.
Oh my gosh.
He chose Russian.
Yes, my condolences.
And now he... So because... Sorry, you lost the Cold War.
Yeah.
And now he doesn't practice any more Russian, and he doesn't speak English
either. Give him my phone number, I will teach him. I teach everyone. I teach. One of my students is a boy with dyslexia,
yeah.
And I've managed to teach him to read in English. And
yeah,
he's very good now.
But he is almost 80 now, so
that's not the problem. My eldest student was 59.
Okay.
I teach everyone. I say I can find approach to everyone.
Wait a second. No, he's not 80. Whoa, wait.
Okay. Whatever. I can teach him. If he wants, I can teach him.
But he's quite old. Old. It's quite
not
old.
A problem. Okay. 15 euro per hour, and
yeah,
he will speak. He will speak English in no
time.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure he wants to learn to speak English. Okay, I have two last questions.
Okay.
I know you already told me a lot of funny stories. Do you have one last funny story to end the thing?
One funny story about students.
No, I don't. Oh, yes, yes.
Let me think. Funny story about students. Actually, there was just mostly some weird things. Okay, a girl I taught English beat me.
Bite you?
Yeah, she just beat me, and she was 9, I think. And I was like, I'm done. I'm done here. So now I don't go to my students. I teach only online because at least they cannot bite me. Let me think.
About something else if you want.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember because mostly I remember it's kind of a nervous job, so when students misbehave, I usually remember it better. There's also kind of bad stories about how terrible sometimes kids might be, because they might be terrible. Okay, this is it's not a funny story, but it's like one of my favorites.
Uh-huh.
Because when people ask me how do I work, why do I work this way, why I work like this, I tell this story. So there is a kid with dyslexia, and he also had some mental problems, I think. But his parents wanted him to be adapted to the society, so they decided not to find a specialist to teach him, but a regular teacher, so he could get used to this and then go to regular school. It was super difficult. Because the kid just couldn't read even in Russian, and he was like, he had problems, like he couldn't sometimes remember the day of the month. He was smart in math, he was really good in engineering, in math things, but some basic things were difficult for him. He was homeschooling, and I tried to find approach to him, and I tried so many, and I tried many student books, many methodics, and I finally managed to find it, and now he can read, he can write, he can more or less speak, and he's doing really great. It took me like half a year, but now in the now he's doing really great and he can do really difficult things. But it was so hard because some of my friends just told me, "Oh, don't work with him. Nothing. You can do nothing. They need to find a specialist." And I said, "Okay, I want to try." But I warned the parents that I can't guarantee anything, but I will try. And now he's just like he's doing really great. But I know he has these problems. Sometimes he cannot read. He doesn't understand what is written. Mm-hmm. But he's working hard, and I'm helping him. And he's very good in English now.
And maybe that's the reason why you are top one.
Yeah,
in
maybe.
The rating.
maybe. Yeah, his father left me a very good review.
Okay.
And there was another girl. She had anxiety.
Yes.
And every time someone said homework, she was crying. Her hands started shaking, and she had under a lot of stress.
Okay.
And her mother told me no homework, and I said no way. She needs to have homework because you want me to teach her. So there will be homework,
yes.
And I will give you a lot of it.
Yeah.
And it took me a while. The girl often cried, forgot her homework, was late for the lesson. And I never angered my students.
Okay.
If I feel that I'm like under pressure myself, I just say, wait a second. I go to the next room and I just, I can yell, I can like, I'm so tired, how? And then I return to the room and I'm okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I never yell at my students, I'm never angry with them, because if they don't understand something, maybe it's my fault, maybe it's me who doesn't explain it correctly. And I often say, I have had a lot of students, you cannot drive them mad. Your parents pay me and they pay me good. There is nothing you can do to drive me crazy. There is nothing, literally nothing you can do.
Except bite you.
Yeah, but they're not here. They're online. They're in a different republic.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm okay. And then her mother once texted me and said, "Listen, I'm so she is not only doing her homework now, but when I asked and I said, 'Oh, do you want me to help you?' She said, 'No, Anastasia said I shouldn't ask my parents for help. I should do all myself.'" And she was like, now she's doing great, and she asks me for giving her grades. She was afraid to get a bad grade, and now she's like, I want a grade, and it doesn't matter if it's bad, I'm okay, I will improve it.
Okay.
And she's like, give me a grade, I wanna be graded on your lessons. And now she's not afraid of anything, just come to the classes in school, and she's like, I know everything, we've already learned it with my teacher. And she's like, she's not an easy child, she's with anxiety, she's a little bit, she's from a rich family, and she sometimes there is this word for, she's like spoiled a little bit.
Okay.
But now she's doing great, and it took me really a lot of nerves
to
handle her, but now she's like, she's amazing. She never misses her lessons, she never forget homework, and she has a very good level for her age. But when she came to me, she had zero, her level was zero. And it, half a year, we've been working half a year already. So those are the things why I work.
Okay.
Because when they say, oh, now I understand what people say, now I understand what is written, now I can write a text in English. And I know that, it was their hard work, but it was also mine.
Mm.
I also taught him them, and this, like, teacher pride. Yeah, so that's why I like my job. It gives a lot of stress, but at the same time, it reward is very good.
Okay.
Like people who suddenly start speaking a different language.
Okay, right. Thank you, Anastasia.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, very nice.
No, okay. See you.
See you.
A big thanks to Anastasia, who has accepted to talk with me during this episode. Thanks also to the Alter Hostel in Lyon and its staff for letting me record the podcast. And thank you for listening to it. You can find other episodes of Let's Talk Venture on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodCloud, and the Internet Archive. You can follow my adventure on Instagram, and all the links will be in the descriptions. And if you've liked this episode, please share it and talk about it around you. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a thumbs up and 5 stars, and I see you next Monday.
Then we'll get frozen standing here all week. Oh, since the revolution, our lives have been so gray. Thank goodness for the gossip that gets us through the day. Hey, have you heard? There's a rumor in St. Petersburg. Have you heard what they're saying on the street?
Although the Tsar did not survive, one daughter may be still alive.
The Princess Anastasia!
But please do not repeat.
It's a rumor, a legend, a mystery.
Something whispered in an alleyway or through a crack.
It's a rumor, that's part of our history.
We say her royal grandmama will pay a royal sum
to someone who can bring the princess back.
Painting, it's Romanov, I swear.
Come, do you suppose pajamas, comrades, by the pair?
I got these from the palace, it's lined with real fur.
It could be worth a fortune if it belonged to her.
It's the rumor, the legend, the mystery. It's the Princess Anastasia who will help us fly. You and I, friend, will go down in history. We'll find a girl to play the part and teach her what to say. Dress her up and take her to Paris. Imagine the reward her dear old grandmama will pay. Who else could pull it off but you and me? We'll be rich.
We'll be rich.
We'll be out.
We'll be out.
And St. Petersburg will have some more to talk about.